The Burroughs of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes. Stomps.
You are listening to the Burroughs of Berea.
Well, welcome back to the Burroughs of Berea. I am Rick Welch, and behind the glass is Rocket Man Andy Bishop. Now, normally when I introduce you in that fashion, it's just me and you, but that's not the case today.
Oh, I get first because they want they get last billing. Yes. They closers.
The one closers. Of my faves is back in the studio. South Carolina State House of Representatives. District 34.
Congrats.
The winner, Sarita the Edge Edgerton.
Hey,
yay. I'm so glad you're back.
I'm glad to be back.
That's so cool. She's a winner.
We all knew it.
But also, she's got Michael the Edge Edgerton. Her husband is in.
He's the OG Edge.
The OG. You were the original Edge.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, she I'm brings
sorry,
that
his
edge.
Dad might have been the OG.
No.
You? Okay.
No? Well. So the last time we had you, I'd caught up with you on the campaign trail, mm-hmm. and you were working really hard in that runoff, going back out, lots yes. of walking. You were exhausted. I could see it in your face. Mm. Just wore slap out. You've lost 18 pounds yep. From doing, what was it, 285,000 steps?
You keep increasing that every time you say
Well, I mean, that's usually, I mean, that I'm lucky if I get my 10,000 steps a day on my little watch here.
I think it was about 15,000 a day, just wow. about every day I did it, 6 days a week.
That's a lot of walking.
No, I do not get 10,000 steps in a day. That's the one thing
I
about.
I guarantee it.
Look, there's one thing about living here and working in your own backyard and also working at a desk.
Yep.
Not a lot of accidental exercise happening
over
here.
Which is precisely why most people don't know this, because it's a podcast and we don't video it. But Andy stands. Andy has a stand-up microphone in his room. He never sits during
oh,
these
yeah.
sessions.
Because this is the first when we started. I was like, yeah, I sit all day. I'm going to stand this up.
I know. Yeah. Yep. And he likes to fidget. And he likes to walk around and chase animals and all that.
You know, I'm probably going to go back and look at the computer anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And have a beer and
whatever.
Possibly. That happens. this is a Arnold Palmer.
An Arizona tea. We love those in
they
our house.
They have Arnold Palmers in a can?
Yes, they do.
When did that happen?
Arizona, years ago.
Yeah. Oh, you see how much I pay attention.
Have those. You're only drinking water.
I only drink water. I'm down 33 pounds.
Hey, man.
Just drinking water.
I was just thinking the other day about how it doesn't matter mostly what you're drinking. If you just stop drinking it, you can like lose weight yeah. almost by accident.
Yeah.
Whether it's beer or soda or almost anything, if you just like switch all your liquids to water, you'll
to alcohol.
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking from alcohol, but it could literally be soda. There's a ton of yeah. that too. Yeah. You could, it's amazing.
No kidding. I was up to almost, sometimes it was around 8 Mountain Dews a day.
Wow.
I was pounding them things.
Mm.
Are your yeah. kidneys all right?
No. I mean, I was borderline no. type 2 diabetes. The insurance agent was like, we're not going to cover you anymore, you know? And so that's what changed me, because I'm a cheapskate. And they said, you're going to have to pay double for your insurance premium. I was like, no, I'm not. I'm going on a diet. And so that's wow. what I'm doing. And double. I actually just got approved. Now I got my old cheap insurance back, and it starts August 1st.
Well, yay. Congratulations,
so
sir.
Hopefully
that's
I don't get
win.
Hurt between now and then. So yeah. everybody just walk easy beside me. Will
okay.
you,
no, you're not going to start running today.
Not a chance. Nope. So tell me, Sarita, so how exhilarating was it when you saw that big green check mark on the TV?
Well, that sort of was a little anticlimactic, if you will. So have you ever wondered when you go to when you see an election and you see where like they call South Carolina with 20% of the vote for President Trump, or for Michigan with 21% of the vote for Biden, yeah. you know, and you wonder how in the world do they do that? Well, I never really thought about it. And I knew because I've been a poll clerk for many years, at the beginning of the day at 7 a.m. or 6:30 a.m., whenever your polls open, whatever machine that you feed your ballot into, you print what's called a zero tape, and on it should be zeros. There should be no ballots fed into that machine before you start the voting for the day. That and the early voting and all that's different machines.
Right.
So at the very beginning of the day, you actually tape that to the outside window of whatever the polling place is, which is usually a school or a church or whatever.
Right.
So everybody can read it. And at the end of the night, consequently, when you go to shut that machine down, you go through a procedure where you print the final tapes of the day. And in those final tapes, it'll tell you how many people came and voted at that precinct, how many were Democrats, how many were Republicans, and how many voted for each candidate. And it'll split it up. You take that same tape and you go and tape it at the front window, just like you would. So anybody, reporters, politicians,
they
whatever,
can walk up and look,
and they're posted there by, as a law, at least in South Carolina, is a law that you have to keep them posted there for, I think, a week or something like that. I'm not sure how long the exact, so don't quote me on that. So we actually had some people coming over for a watch party. And that morning I was just sick to my stomach, just, you know, what could we possibly do in 11 days to affect this outcome from the first one? And were the third party candidate, that third candidate's, he endorsed my opponent. Mm-hmm. Were his votes going to go to her? Had we knocked on enough doors? Had we done enough? And I just could not eat. I was so nervous. And I looked at him. I said, we're going to have this party and I'm going to lose and I'm going to cry. And then I'm just going to go to bed and leave everybody out here like a bad hostess. And so I was just kind of nervous all day. I didn't really eat anything. And we had some people who were going to go. I had 20 polling places about.
20.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 20 polling places. And we knew which ones were big ones, mm-hmm. which had the most population. Some of the ones that are a little farther out maybe only had 10, 12, 15 voters. Those were, depending on what the numbers were at the other places, those were of littler consequence. We didn't need to send somebody out that far to get them in parts of the rural parts of my district. So we went to the heavy populated ones, and he started at the one that I won pretty handily, and it was our largest, right?
It was Poplar.
Poplar, okay.
Which was, you won it handily, but it was probably middle of the road.
Yeah. So he started there, and we had other people posted at other places. As soon as the tapes went up, take the picture, text it. He had a spreadsheet. He was putting it in the spreadsheet. He's a numbers guy. He likes numbers, kind of geeky.
Yeah.
And and I was getting texts at the same time. He was getting texts. So we got our home polling precinct, which we had won. I had won pretty handily before. We rocked those neighborhoods in that part of the precinct. And when that first one came in, and I had won by like 214 votes to 100. I was like, "Ooh, that's a heavy one. That's a hard one to get over." Because they were saying in the primary, it was 13.5% of registered voters actually voted.
Yeah, that's so sad.
It is very sad because most of the races in South Carolina, a lot of the races in South Carolina are chosen at the primary because a lot of us don't have opposite party.
Right.
People mm-hmm. to vote for. So I don't have
a lot of seats run unopposed.
I have no Democrat opponent because we're 75-25 conservative.
Right.
To
it makes no sense to run.
Yeah, there's no monetary sense.
That's like a waste of money.
Yeah.
Now you go across the interstate, 26, and that's more of a 60-40 or 65-35. And so those actually have Democrats
or Republicans. They can get enough swing votes to possibly win.
Yeah, or people who are just ticked at Trump or whatever, they're going to switch and vote. But
which is so bizarre. I'm ticked at Trump, so I'm going to vote for some random Democrat.
Right. But
people do it.
It's a different demographic. So we got that one, and we got another big one where I won like by 60% to 40%. And then his finally got posted, and then we got three others. And by that time, we knew it was mathematically impossible
for
her to come back to overcome the votes. All but one district, we flipped and won 60-40 or 65-35. I think I did. I get up into the 70s with a couple of them.
Yeah,
in the 70s, wow. She won in one precinct.
She won one. Right.
She won, and it was her own precinct by 7 votes.
Only 7. Mm-hmm. So she, all of her family voted.
Maybe, or business partners, or whatever.
Yeah, so I mean, I would say nice things about the lady, but I mean, she was kind of a jerk, right? Sorry, you don't have to say that. You don't have to say anything. Did she call you and say anything after you won?
I got no concession
call.
Are
you serious? Mm-mm. God, such a Trump move.
So, but we... but we kind of knew ahead of time, and I had been telling people who were sitting out on our back deck by the pool waiting. I was like, we won that district, that precinct. We won that one. We won that one. We won that one. And finally, I was like, y'all, I think it's mathematically impossible, but... You know, we were kind of waiting for that moment with the check mark,
yep.
Which was one of the most surreal moments of my life, to see my name for an election I should never have won. Mm-hmm. I should not have been running in. And anyway, it was pretty spectacular, and I cried still even thinking about it. And
you didn't go to bed early, though, did you?
I did not go to bed early, but I did. I had my bathing suit on, so I went swimming. And then it was just sort of a small little party. We didn't have a bunch of people, maybe 20 people or so. And some of them were people who knocked doors for us. Some of them were friends who had prayed for us, donated to our campaign, had just been an integral part of what we had done, and just had some light hors d'oeuvres, finger yeah. foods, and their kids came and swam, and we had our whole family there. Well, his parents couldn't come, but our family was there. And it was just a nice time to take a moment and breathe. It was the first time since that day in March that I haven't felt this pit in my stomach of anxiety. Am I doing enough? Am I doing this right? Am I talking to the right people? Am I knocking on the right door? I mean, there's all kinds of things that go through your head. You know, everybody has different ways that they believe that you win an election. Some people think it's money and signs, go into different events, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the most effective campaigns are door-to-door knocking campaigns. And as Michael will tell you, that is not easy.
It doesn't sound easy.
I don't know if anybody's ever come and knocked on your door other than maybe a solar panel guy or Jehovah's a termite Witness. Guy or...
I've had Jehovah's Witnesses.
Jehovah's Witnesses. Yeah. On Saturdays, I go, the last person, or maybe the next to last person you want to see on your doorstep today. I'm not a Jehovah's Witness, but I am running for office. So.
This episode is brought to you by Supply Chain Solutions.
Supply Chain Solutions is a third-party logistics company providing small to mid-sized businesses an outsourcing option focusing on warehouse management, customization of products, assembly, and packaging of goods, and has the ability to meet business-to-business and business-to-consumer fulfillment needs. Supply Chain Solutions continually strive to be their customers' most highly valued partners for quality, delivery, responsiveness, and customer service. To learn more about Supply Chain Solutions, you can visit their website at www.supplychainsolutions3pl.com. That's www.supplychainsolutions3pl.com.
And now back to the show.
The whole door-to-door idea, it used to be how you campaigned because you didn't have the internet, you didn't have social media. You could send out letters, and you've probably gotten flyers from politicians. But what do you do with them?
Yeah. Throw them away usually.
Throw them away. Throw them in the trash. And how else do you get in front of the regular people? Not the donor class. Not other politicians. How do you talk to people like you? You're just a regular person.
Yeah.
How do you talk to people like Andy, who lives in a regular house and does a regular job? Door-to-door knocking, even in this day and age, is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
you prove that.
It's a daunting task. And there are others around the state who did it, some with the same results and some with not as good results. But we had some mixed responses. And I know Mike has been wanting to talk a little bit about that because sometimes it really hacks you off. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah?
It just hacks you off.
Well, I was really curious about that. Yeah, and just, you know, there's a little level of anxiety and fear for me just to walk up to a perfectly stranger's house for no, you know, obviously I have a reason, but to open that up, you know, most people don't really want you to come in their door these days.
I did census during Obama. It was really fun. I would not have wanted to do it under Trump.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. So how about you, Mike? How about some experiences you had?
Well, it was I didn't really know what to think when it started. Of course, I always supported her. And when was it, March 15th is when you, mm-hmm. when you actually applied to file for office. And so I was on board. I supported her. But, you know, in my mind, I'm also thinking, well, I got to work. We got to support family and all that. So I didn't want to say I left her on her own.
Yeah.
But she did a lot of the legwork on her own for maybe 2 weeks or so. I don't know. Maybe I was busy at work. But eventually I started like, okay, I'll go with you. I'll ride out and just see what you're doing and see how it works. And it's not my nature to go up to people either. But I did, you know, learn to through church, through like evangelism explosion, mm-hmm. Things like that. But anyway, and so I started doing that. I started going doors with her, talking to people. But there was one particular day. I think it was the second time we ever went out. It was a Saturday morning. We went to one house on the end of a cul-de-sac, and the guy was just fantastic. We talked to him. You know immediately sometimes if somebody's going to support her, or I say support us, but support her. And so really what you want to do in that circumstance is get off their porch and go somewhere else. You don't want to spend 30 minutes talking to somebody who's you've already locked up their vote. In general, I mean, you do want to talk to them and see what concerns them, yeah. and things like that. But and so the goal was to reach people. And so we're trying to do that. And so we hit that first house. It was maybe 10 in the morning. He said, yeah, my neighbor, she's real involved in politics. You need to go talk to her. And so we walked off his porch. We never cut through grass. You know, we always stick to the sidewalks and the roads. And so we walked out to the road, back around, and the lady was sitting on her porch. And we thought, oh, this would be another. She's involved in the Republican Party in Spartanburg County. And so we went up there and started talking to her. You know, Sarita did her pitch. She looked there and said, I'm not impressed. You don't have my vote. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
Okay, that's interesting. We'll get into later, I guess, about you get some interesting responses. But we didn't expect it from this lady who's involved in the Republican Party. And so, you know, Sarita said, can I ask why? And she's like, I don't know you. You're not involved in any Republican things. I never see you at any meetings. And she kind of went on this for a couple of minutes. And so I usually let her handle her own battles, you know, when she's talking to these people. But I had to put a stop to that. I was like, what do you mean Republican things? Let me tell you about the lifestyle that Sarita lives personally. She homeschools her kids. She serves, you know, at the CPC. She's led Bible studies leading women who had abortions to Christ and to healing. She teaches Sunday school. I just went through the list of what she does every day. And I told, you know, looked at her and said, she doesn't go to meetings. She lives a conservative lifestyle.
Right.
I mean, what more do you want? And she kind of backed off a little bit, but she still kind of was a little stoic after that, I think.
Yeah.
And eventually her husband came out and they left. And it just ticked me off. I just could not let go of that.
For days. days he was talking about this woman.
Whenever I think about it, have you seen Happy Gilmore?
Oh, yeah.
Where Happy has a fight with Bob Barker.
Yes.
And every time he thinks about him, he's like, oh, that Bob Barker.
Yes.
That was me with that lady.
He's eating that Subway. Yeah. I'm just going to eat this sandwich. That dang Bob Barker.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like that with that lady for like a week.
That's funny.
And there are very few movie references that Rick won't get.
That's right. Yeah. But so anyway, that just kind of spurred my competitive drive, I think.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, I realized like, we got to win this thing. And there were some other things too, but that was like the one moment where I was, you know, I committed myself to this race and to helping her and making sure she got to where she needed to go and talked to the right people. And
he became a navigator, and we have an app that tells you who voted in the last few primaries, Republican, And so you know which houses to target. You don't just walk up to Hillary Clinton's house and knock on her door. You know she's not going to vote for you, right?
So well, we just stopped the Dario, and it's very good.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're a sponsor or not. They're very good. But we were talking at dinner.
They need to be.
Yes.
But she would, with different people we talked to in the houses, she would kind of jokingly say, well, my husband's my campaign manager. And I always kind of laughed that off because there are other people who, I don't know anything about politics, really. I mean, I follow it, but how the inner workings of it and how you win a campaign, it's all new to me. I'm good with numbers. I'm not Rain Man, but I'm good with numbers.
Yeah.
But she always said, he's my campaign manager. But we were talking at dinner a minute ago. She had people who were consulting her, but we actually talked about the definition of a campaign manager, somebody who conducts the day-to-day operations of reaching people. Mm-hmm. How exactly do you do that? Maybe from a tactical level, not a strategic level. And that's what I was doing, I guess. You know, I had the data, I had the app. The app was kind of neat. It splits up our district into what they call walk books, and there were 50 to 55 of them. And each walk book had anywhere from 30 to 60 houses. And those were our primary targets. And so maybe the surveyor in me helps a little bit, but I would plot our route through the walk books and just try to be as efficient as possible so we could hit, you know, when she's by herself, she probably works at half the speed.
Driving. Yeah. I don't have to buckle. He's just going from house to house. I get in and out.
Right.
If there are two or three together, I just kind of walk those and he comes and picks me up and we go to the next three or four. And you just walk up to the door, you knock on the door, you ring the doorbell. And it's funny because there's actually a technique to that. You ring the doorbell and then you do the
knock. Let's do a spiel. Okay. I want you to imagine that I'm the guy you're coming to try to win my vote.
Okay.
Okay? So let's do that. Let's hear your little knock knock.
Okay, I haven't done it in a while. You want to put a ding dong in here? There is a ding dong in here.
Actually, there's a ding dong behind the glass.
So you actually ring the doorbell and then you go. So you make it sound friendly. You don't go bang, 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 bang and ring the doorbell.
So you don't do the cop knock.
No. SWAT team! But you ring the doorbell.
So shaving a haircut.
And sometimes I won't do the two bits, but I'll wait for them to answer the door.
They'll have to open it because they want to hear the two bits.
Yeah. And so I back off a couple of steps. And they answer the door.
And I'll say, good morning.
And I'll say, hello. Hi, Rick. I'm Sarita Edgerton. I'm running for SC House District 34 for the Republican Party. Are you familiar with this race?
I am not familiar with it at all.
Okay. So there are three of us running in the race. I am one of them.
Wait. Are you that evil lady that I saw on my flyer?
Yes.
Oh.
That's what actually... Okay, I brought one.
I want to see.
Yes. Isn't this great? I can't wait to see this evil flyer and to see how Mike handled it so well.
Because people actually said, hey, I got some flyers. Can I go get them? And I said, yeah. And so they actually brought them out to me. And this was the very first one I got about 2 weeks after I filed.
Oh, my gosh. Is that from when you were in the hospital?
That is a woman who's tied up to a pole to be executed by.
Oh, my gosh.
What do you call it? Firing squad? And that's Fat Me.
Oh, So I got this in the mail, and you look entirely hideous.
And then I show up like this, and you're like...
Wait a minute. Yeah, and are you actually going to sentence my daughters to death?
No. Unfortunately, that's an extreme lie. And then on the other side, they had NBC News, shocking report, you know.
Oh.
So we were shocked when we got this. This came to my daughter, Ella. Y'all know Ella.
Yeah.
This came to her. We were shocked, frankly, because I knew presidential politics get messy. Senate, you know.
Yeah. Even state Senate can get a little messy.
But this is just a little house race that nobody, they were running on a putt. I mean, there was nobody in the seat. There was no incumbent. And I hadn't really talked to anybody.
Yeah.
Nobody had asked me my thoughts on this particular bill. So when I got the flyer that I was in favor of putting women to death who had abortions.
What is the bill in reference?
The bill is in reference.
Oh, it's an abortion thing? Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
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 What is the bill?
3549.
Yeah. It's H3549. It's actually right here at the bottom. And it says, instead of protecting life, radical Sarita Edgerton... Mm-hmm. Pledged loyalty to a fringe group of legislators who proposed a bill to sentence women, our daughters and granddaughters, to death who have had abortions. Sarita is too extreme.
Which is impossible, because how could you have?
Well, I pledged loyalty. It didn't say I voted,
okay,
but I pledged loyalty to people who
so
did.
So how do they know that you pledged loyalty?
Did they
you
say? Didn't. They didn't ask.
So they just lied.
They lied.
Well, there's
did you pledge loyalty to them?
No, I did not. Thank you for asking,
there you
Andy.
Well, there you go.
But no. What people, so this went out in
the
our
answer
district.
To that question, though, involves a little bit of defining terms, the political environment in South Carolina.
Go do that.
Okay. The part of it's speculation, but South Carolina has long been a Democrat state. Up until the mid-90s, the speculation is that the populace remained socially conservative, and so the Democratic Party was kind of splitting from that.
A lot of people became the Reagan conservatives. Well, you remember the Reagan right. people?
Blue Dog Democrats. They were very pro. Let's not get into it.
Yeah. So basically what happened, the Blue Dog Democrats became Republican in order to retain office.
Right.
And so the speculation is, the thought is that a lot of those Blue Dog Democrats are still Democrats and they're still holding on to power in Columbia.
I see no evidence.
What?
I see very little evidence of South Carolina being governed by secret Democrats.
Well, we have a supermajority and we've had it a long time. And people are our Republican legislators are still voting somewhere in 25% conservative on issues. I mean, you know, according to Liberty Index.
I mean, who defines conservative? That's according
to conservatives.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
But maybe to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, they all vote conservative, according to me. Trust me, 100% of the time.
Okay,
they're not doing anything the liberals or the Democrats want. We're not like watching South Carolina like, man, the way they snuck that one in.
Okay. I'll give you a good example.
Because they can't. Because the populace doesn't want it.
Yeah.
So they have to fool the populace to say, oh, you're like
me. Give me an example.
Okay.
We've had a supermajority for years. And a huge issue in South Carolina, well, around the country, is trans men playing women's sports. That is without doubt.
And it's so common.
It's becoming common. And so,
no, I'm full of shit. I lied. That is not common
at
all. That is ridiculous. Statistically, if a tenth of a single percent of the population, that would be wild.
Well, let's get talking about this girl that lives over in Highlands with the...
Yeah, I met a trans person once that played sports in a men's team. That doesn't make it it doesn't mean the whole world is going that way.
Oh, I was thinking about how this was going to work.
Yeah.
Well, it's just people just like they hold up. It's all scarecrows all the time. It's all scarecrows.
It's happening and it's becoming more common.
Yeah. I'm sure it's a huge deal.
Okay,
the example, I know how you feel about it. We're not in Asheville. We don't live in Hendersonville. We live in South Carolina District 34, a hugely conservative area.
And you know
whether
what?
You agree or not.
I will say this. I'm not even like 100% for that because I think there is a physical difference between a man and a woman.
Okay.
And that will get me cooked in a lot of places. But the way people are just like worried about it and the percentage that actually happens is just ridiculous. And people are so mad.
Hold on. Let's not argue the issue. That wasn't what the question was. Regardless of your feelings about it, people in our state and our district are totally against this, the thought of men playing in women's sports. And so, what was it? The Save Women's – what was that called?
Save Women's Sports
Save
Act.
Women's Sports. That bill, with our supermajority, struggled to get through the legislature.
Yeah.
And it took – I don't know all the detail, you know, all the inner workings of it.
It took somebody outing the people who wouldn't put it through committee – and their people in their districts finding out that they didn't want to push it through the committee. And once you had to get it through the committee to get it onto the floor for a vote. And they were shamed, not shamed, but once they were exposed that they were not willing to do this, though I would say 85% of my district
wants it's basically it to be. Misrepresentation is what it is that they're saying that they're conservative and they're not voting across conservative lines.
They don't hate the right people. Not enough anyway.
But that's the point. But that's the point, Andy, is that they're not truly representing. They're running on a campaign that says, I follow your lines, I'll vote based on the populace.
But we all agree that sometimes the majority needs to be ignored, like when they're going to hurt the minority.
I have no right? problem with that.
That is the reason they voted against.
this case aside, that is a true thing and you all know it. Everyone knows it. We, occasionally, you have to protect the minority from the majority. This case is not, nobody's punching them in the face. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying you cannot always do everything the majority says because sometimes it is destructive.
I'll show you where I will agree with you on this. And that was back in the 70s, late 70s and early 80s, when rape culture, the majority of the people always blamed the women. And that was women blaming women and men blaming women. And it took behavioral scientists and the FBI and criminal court cases and all kinds of stuff that really started changing the laws and getting the information out for those minorities, these women minorities, that had no protection whatsoever.
Of course, so there's some of that. Racism is the classic example of the minority needing to be protected from the majority.
So there's something, and you may have it in your state, and you'll have to do that. You'll have to look at that. But we have something called the SC, South Carolina, GOP platform. I'm sure the Democrats have their own platform.
Sure. Yeah, they all have.
Everybody has their own platform. But when you decide to run as a Republican, you say, I believe, I'd say 90% of what's on this in this document, okay? And whatever that is, if you run as a Democrat, you say, I believe 90% of what's in this Democrat platform, right? That's what you say. And you tell your people in your district that you believe that. But then you go.
That some things are going to be in the 10%.
And then you have to explain to your district why you voted. And that's part of politics. I get it. I get that's part of politics. But when you represent yourself as being pro-life, pro-2A.
I mean, if you want direct democracy, there's an argument for that. But that's not what we are. We're a republic.
Correct. But what you're not hearing, what I'm saying is when you say, and you run for office, I ran for office, and I say, I believe in the tenets of the GOP platform, but then I go down there and vote to raise your taxes, get rid of your gun rights, promote abortion, there's all kinds of things I can put in there.
It's misrepresentation.
It's misrepresentation of who I said I was.
And then it works itself out through the political process because the next time there's a vote, the next person is going to say, this is what you voted on, this is what you voted on, this is what you voted on.
Do you want to go over the Senate sisters? What happened there? It's a similar issue.
Oh, the Senate sisters. There are these three women who ran in their districts as Republicans, as people who were pro-life. They were probably not quite the same pro-life as me. They probably had their own thoughts on it. They did. They had their own thoughts. They were called the Senate Sisters. And they got to Columbia in the Senate, and there were three of them, and they voted exactly the opposite of what they said they were going to vote. They flipped.
Yeah.
What was the issue exactly?
It was the heartbeat bill.
The six-week
heartbeat bill. They said they were for it when they ran. They got elected. When the bill came to be,
did they ever get to explain themselves, or do you know anything about it?
Yes, they did.
Okay,
they got to explain themselves. And when they explained themselves to their districts, they all got flipped.
Well,
this time.
What was their explanation?
I can't remember what their explanation was. Do you remember what they said?
No, not really.
Okay.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
They have speeches that you can go look at.
I assume they had their reasons.
Basically, exceptions. The normal exceptions for abortion.
I assume they had their reasons.
They thought that, I believe it was, they said that they were for the six-week heartbeat ban because you get asked that question. When they got down there, they then said that 6 weeks was too early.
They
changed their mind. I don't know if they gave reasons why. Whatever reasons they gave, if they gave any, were not enough for their districts, and they, all three, got gone this time.
Well, and because now that it's more of a state issue than it is a federal issue, things are getting a little bit more heated in the state side,
Yes.
From one state to the next. which stinks because all of the people that, you know, are more on the liberal side, they can't necessarily just pick up from Texas and move to Colorado or wherever, you know, wherever it changes, whatever state, or if it's Massachusetts or whatever.
Greenville is one of the most moved to places, like in the last year, I think. I don't know the exact number, but it's very.
And they still elected some of the most conservative people this past time, too.
Yeah, we got sidetracked majorly.
Yeah. On this is what we do here.
The whole point, I know.
But he's listened to a couple.
Point, yeah, the point was that we have, whether it's true or not, there's a perception that there are Democrats who are, there are Republicans in office who say they're Republicans, but they're Democrats. They're rhinos. But there's a big movement against that right now. But anyway, it kind of caused a civil war within the Republican Party. It caused a fracture.
Yeah,
there was a fracture in the South Carolina GOP, and it spit off this fringe group that has been alluded to in that flyer there called the Freedom Caucus. And then you might have heard of that nationally, Chip Roy, Thomas Massey.
It's like the old Tea Party.
Yeah.
It's very much along the lines of a Tea Party, and it fractured. There's a whole bunch of issues. The Freedom Caucus got kicked out of the GOP caucus, and I didn't understand any of that going in. I really didn't. I might be the dumbest person to ever run for office because I didn't know any of that.
I'm pretty sure that's not true.
Yeah, I would assume that it's not true.
I just meant politically, like politically working, like how politics work. Maybe naive is a better word.
There you go.
Just did not understand how bad this rift was, and this flyer that I'm holding up that nobody can see because we don't have video came from within my own party.
Yeah.
Came from Republicans. Didn't come from Democrats. I would have expected that.
Yeah.
But when it came from my own party, from a group of people who never asked me, did I believe in this? And anybody's heard my testimony on this podcast knows my thoughts on women who've had abortions. I am compassionate towards them.
Right.
And it's what I've been doing for almost two decades, working with women, trying to show them that there is another way, that this is not the only way. But this was the first one that went out about 2 weeks after I filed. And I guess I didn't realize how many people in my district that I knew.
Yeah.
Like personally, and who knew me personally. I probably got, 200 text messages, phone calls, emails that day when they checked the mail. What is this nonsense? Did they even do any fact checking?
I mean, clearly not in this particular case.
In this particular case. Yeah. And they, but if you look at everyone, they sent it around the state. And the only thing they did was switch the name, switch the picture with another awful picture of the whoever it was.
So they used it again?
Copy and pasted to another person in another part of the state.
So they're also lazy.
Or uncreative.
Well, it was a coordinated attack.
It was coordinated.
This fracture that happened in the Republican Party was only 2 years ago. And in fact, it was the Save Women's Sports Bill where it kind of originated, because one of a very vocal, very conservative lady started calling out the legislators who were voting against this bill. And they didn't like that very much because they knew the people they represent would not like that.
Well, then that's the difficulty of all of this is that, like, for example, that sports bill, you know, you have a giant polarized division in our country on what people think that you should do. And it is a giant division. It is, even though it covers a small percentage of our people, it takes up about, you know, what would you say that it gets quite a bit of interest in the media because it sells. I mean, that's what it works. I mean, it gets people's blood pumping, and that's what people watch, and that's where advertising dollars go.
And it's not even such a small percentage of the actual issues that matter.
But if it gets
influence is so oversized.
But if it does get to the NCAA level, Andy, let's just talk grand scale here. If it gets to the NCAA level, like right now, we already know that the Olympic Committee put it out. They stopped that international level. They're like, nope, can't do it. There is enough science behind it to understand that there are, depending on where the development was, when they can or can't. It's just, it's a muddy mess.
Sure. Yeah.
Which
absolutely.
I think sucks. Let me get this out first. I think that there are people that are transgender, that are incredible athletes, that I wish that they could go out and compete at the level that they feel and I wish that they could, but it's just not realistic. There needs to be perhaps a way to get them in somehow. But when people like Leah Thomas, who has swam as a male swimmer all the way up till within 2 years and has only just started the hormone therapy change,
yeah,
and Riley Gaines loses the first place simply because of that reason, she actually beat Leah Thomas later in a race. So she actually competed and beat her at that level. So
after she was on therapy for a while.
That's right.
Yeah.
Once that therapy kind of went through, then it sort of like balanced it out. So that, yeah, in the science is probably there, but it's just the win and everybody's different.
Right.
So it's hard. And there's a lot of mothers and fathers out there that want their daughters to compete in a fair way. You know, they just do. And so those people in South Carolina that are like, this is important to me. I want my daughters to be able to compete. I see that. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was a personal
And then I also think
us.
Of the other parents that have transgender kids that want them to be able to compete too. And although we may not agree with their lifestyle, that doesn't matter. These are just human beings that are trying to compete. And so I wish we could find a way to do it. But you can't misrepresent yourself in the political process. You're standing up for a populace.
No,
that's
and
what you're doing.
And when you do... If you're caught at it, you get exposed.
Yeah.
And then the people know, oh, well, you were a flipping liar. So you didn't do what we asked you to do. And so you're gone.
Yeah.
And
so it's going to be important on the things that you ran that you actually stand up for your constituents and you do what you said you were going to do when you knocked on their door.
Yes.
You said, I'm going to do this.
One point you brought up was it's hard to know what a federally. Yeah. It's hard to know. You can't take half the country and say, well, this is what half the country believes. That's not true because
right. There's
so much variation. But within our own district, you know, that gets whittled down to 40,000 people. And
then that gets whittled down to...
To the actual voters.
3,000 or right. so that actually vote in primaries.
Yeah. So as a... She's kind of on the bottom rung of state politics, I suppose. But you have a... I mean, not in importance, but just in numbers. Just in the numbers in our district. Yeah, with those numbers, you can get a very good idea of what people believe. So it's not hard.
Really. I mean, just voter turnout itself tells you the climate of your country.
Right.
They do not care.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
They do not care about the political process. But,
yeah, and a lot just of us feel just like bored it doesn't with it. Matter. A lot of it is just people that are just frustrated.
Oh, yeah.
They feel like it doesn't
You're
matter.
Right.
I know.
They feel like they don't matter, rather. Not it doesn't matter that
I
they
was
don't
driving
matter.
In my car up to Maine last week. And my mom and dad were just absolutely ripping Trump, just going off on Trump, just ripping him. And at the end of it, my mom goes, well, I didn't vote, so I really can't complain. I was like, no, you've done a good job for like the last hour. You did really good.
Yeah, trust me. I've met a lot of people. It's never stopped them from complaining.
But even with that, you know, the app we were telling you about, after the primary on June 11th, it got refreshed. And so we got the updated data of people's addresses got updated because a lot of the houses – the data was current as of 2 years ago before the 11th. And so we didn't, you know, sometimes you'd see like five different people at a certain house. And so being a surveyor, I'd go on there and punch up, I'd get online and figure out who actually lives there. And that was helpful too. But after the primary, about 2 days later, that all got updated with who actually voted. We could kind of, you know, cross-reference it to our first go round. And so that really allowed us to,
So yeah, you guys
target those people,
and you saw that you were successful. That what you had done
initially,
you saw that this translated at the polls.
But we're talking about people who don't care. But you know, there were a lot of houses we'd drive by, and they'd have American flags everywhere or Trump flags.
Yeah.
Whether you like Trump or not, if you see somebody with, you know, three Trump flags in your yard, you're like, that's a voter right there.
Yeah.
But then you pull up the stuff; they didn't vote in the primary. I'm like, what? Why?
Well, it's like any other fad.
Yeah,
honestly, it's a fad.
That's what we kind of,
you know, the Trump train was a thing. Right.
It was a fad.
This episode is brought to you by Supply Chain Solutions.
Supply Chain Solutions is a third-party logistics company providing small to mid-sized businesses an outstanding option focusing on warehouse management, customization of products, assembly and packaging of goods, and has the ability to meet business-to-business and business-to-consumer fulfillment needs. Supply Chain Solutions continually strive to be their customers' most highly valued partners for quality, delivery, responsiveness, and customer service. To learn more about Supply Chain Solutions, you can visit their website at www.supplychainsolutions3pl.com. That's www.supplychainsolutions3pl.com.
And now back to the show.
So yeah, we oftentimes got people who invited us in, come on in. And I couldn't do that a whole lot.
My mom has a coffee cake just for this occasion.
I thought about getting one of those dog collars that you can kind of buzz. She talks a little bit.
Can you imagine if you stepped up on, you'd be there for 4 hours and
I'd only
terrible.
Get six votes because I'd never get up their porch.
And then you'd get
I was worried about that.
And then you'd get people who were like, okay, thank you for the information. I appreciate you stopping by. We got people who would say, I went to a trailer park, registered voters, walked up on their porch, knocked on the door. She opened the door and asked, hey, I'm Sarita Edgerton. I'm running for South Carolina House District 34. Was coming out to talk to you, see what's important to you. And she said, why are you here? And I'm like, well, did you vote? Well, yes. Did you vote in a primary? Yes. That's why I'm here. Your vote matters to me. And she looked at me. She said, nobody's ever shown up on my door. Yeah. Nobody cares what I think. I said, I care what you think.
Yeah.
And she, I mean, we heard story after story like that. We heard stories of people who their daughter was severely mentally and physically disabled. And she was 30 years old. And at the age of 18, they had to adopt her. They had to go through the adoption process because she was a legal adult. And they had to spend thousands of dollars to go through the process of adopting their own daughter because she can't care for herself. With the guardian ad litem and all, like, it's expensive. And they were, you know, just, you could tell they were heartbroken over it. And the way they were taxed on their special vehicle they had to have to carry, they were taxed like it was an RV instead of a necessary vehicle to carry around a family member. Mm-hmm. And heartbreaking stories we would never have heard because we don't run in those people's circles typically. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of people who would come to the door and they'd have that little side window and they'd be like, go away. And they're the first people who will be complaining when I don't do something.
Yeah.
You know, we had a lot of get off my dang lawn type people. But we also had a lot of people who were very informed. They wanted to talk about what was important to them and their issues. I put my phone number on my paraphernalia that I gave out, and they would text me. They would call me, hey, have you seen this bill out of Arkansas or whatever? And so we would, but, you know, they felt heard, some of them for the very first time. And that's kind of where, that's where we won it, was on the streets and in the neighborhoods. And at the very beginning, somebody said, be sincere, be you. And if they like you, because you're likable, they're going to vote for you. But if you go there and you're fake and you say what they want to hear, they're not going to like you. Yeah. And so
that's another reason why I wouldn't get votes. Well, so I want to ask Mike a question. So, Mike, you see all this, you see the negative campaign, you see how hard your wife is working. What does that do? Like, how did this affect your marriage in your eyes?
Well, I think it probably strengthened it because it became a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
It was exhausting. I mean, there's no doubt about it for different reasons. I mean, I think she bared the stress and the anxiety as being the candidate, obviously. Right. Mine was a little different because I'm still working full time. And so I don't know, get up at 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock and start work. You know, we'd start campaigning at maybe 2, 3 mm-hmm. till 8. And then I may come home and work a couple more hours.
Long days.
I had very little sleep.
Yeah.
And I remember there's some weeks where I'd go like 7 days in a row with like 4 or 5 hours of sleep.
Mm.
It was kind of rough, you know, for different reasons for both of us. But the thing was, we both kind of looked forward to that time together in the car.
So, yeah.
And we would strategizing and, and it wasn't just that. We'd come home and she would have text messages from who know, you know, everybody. And so part of it was soap opera too, because we could sit for hours and talk about all the different mechanics going on within South Carolina politics
yeah.
that kind of affected her race, because she kind of that civil war we were talking about, she kind of rode the line right between the two caucuses.
Because like Andy said, I had not pledged loyalty or joined any of the groups.
Yeah. And so, on one hand, she was accused of being a part of that group. But then, you know, and they were attacked from the GOP caucus, but they were clearly lies because of her testimony, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, she was able to ride that line. But anyway, and so, you know, we'd come home at night and she'd read all the texts she got or the phone calls and we'd talk about the drama. You know, it was just, we spent a lot of time. We spent more time together than we have in a long time. Like,
it's a fun
not team. Just sitting around the house watching TV, but actually in the car.
Doing a thing. Yeah. It's a little team sport.
Working together. Goal. You did
a thing. Yeah. So at the end of it, it's kind of, it was bittersweet. I mean, we were so glad to be done with the actual campaigning.
I'm sure.
I think both of us miss riding around together and talking and all that. So.
And
so,
but these flyers hurt him more than they hurt me. They fueled my fire. But for him, that's his wife they're talking about, you know, and he said that several times, you know. And then it began to fuel his fire. We would get two or three a week. We'd get text messages, you know, because that's the new way to send things out is by text message.
Yeah, the Bob Barker lady bothered me.
There's a Bob Barker lady?
You didn't hear it.
You were out there talking to TC. Dang, yeah, Bob Barker lady from Happy Gilmore.
That really pissed him off.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But yeah, these... And that, like she said, that flyer was the first one she, that was all, it was just incredulous that somebody would, we've already talked about this, but would put that out without doing a little research. But that wasn't the only one. She got another one that said she was against cops, teachers, and
clean water.
I mean, every mom is against
clean water. Clean water?
I hate clean water.
What was there?
Hydrofracking, maybe?
What did clean water ever do to me?
This is basically what happened.
Did they have reasoning for that? Where does that come from?
The Freedom Caucus. Members of the Freedom Caucus voted against a bill that improved some kind of water system, but they would put riders in that bill that had nothing to do with what the bill was about. You know,
that is how it works.
Just like you see it in Washington all the time, they're voting against extra stuff that's raising
earmarks,
taxes.
Pork barrel spending.
Right. That's what they're doing. They're voting against pork, you know, not against what the core of the bill is about.
Of course.
And then they can weaponize it.
So that was tough. But right after I won the primary, nobody was more shocked than the people who sent those flyers out. And apparently, I was a bit of a conversation the next day in Columbia. I made quite the stir. They did not understand. Because I still, even though I didn't win the primary outright, like 50, because you had a 50+1%, I had 41 point something, and she had 34 point something, and the guy below had 25. It was shocking.
Yeah.
Probably to her the most, because she was asked to run for this position by leadership in the state. And so I was not. I just came out of nowhere.
You come in answering a prayer, answering something, a calling, and you're ruining her day.
And never put up the first dang sign.
To answer your question, that's kind of how the flyers started. This lady was recruited by the House GOP. He's enemies with the Freedom Caucus, and say whether it's true or not, they just aligned her with it so they could attack her. But some reason they figured out early on that she was the main threat, and not the guy who came in third place.
The dude that didn't do anything.
Right. Right.
But and got 25% of the vote.
He just lived there his whole life. You know, he was on school boards.
So. No, he's only been there for 20 years.
Oh, never mind then.
So, all right. So my other question before we wrap this up is to Michael. How did it feel for you when you saw the green check mark?
Well, kind of like her, I was nervous all day long because even though I'm not the candidate,
he likes to win.
I like to win.
Yeah.
I'm a lifelong sports and board games and all this stuff, but I love to win. But it became over the course of the campaign just my competitiveness all the way through. And so, on one hand, I'd have been terribly upset if she lost. But on the other, I was, you know, hey, we can get back to normal life. We can go do things we enjoy. You don't have to go to Columbia and hang out with all those clowns all the time. But sorry if anybody's listening in Columbia. But
not everyone who lives in Columbia is a clown.
No. Especially all the politicians that are going to be working with Sarita here pretty soon.
Right. But, you know, so I wouldn't have been – it would have hurt in the competitive spirit that if she would have lost. But, you know, I could have lived with it. But regardless, I was still nervous the entire day. And I knew, you know, we had people coming over for the watch party and she had to host being the candidate. And I was like, I just can't do this. I have to get out. And so I was one of the ones going to check the tapes. Those tapes just to be clear, are besides the people actually running the precincts, that is the first time the results are revealed to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever tape might be on a particular precinct, it might be an hour and a half before it gets back to Spartanburg County and actually counted. And so I was like, hey, I'm not sitting around for an hour and a half waiting on the TV to tell me whether you won or not. And so, you know, I went out and checked the tapes, and I went to Poplar Springs, which is our biggest precinct, and where the guy who's vacated his seat, he lives in that precinct. And so we thought that was a big one because we didn't really know if he – what he thought about her. We knew he liked Sarita. We didn't know if he was campaigning against – we just didn't know.
Did he just retire? Or
no, he ran for state senate and won. And won.
Okay. He's very popular in our district. Yeah. And so I thought that was a big one. That would tell us a lot. But I got there, and for some reason they were slow. And so we had a – couple other people, Representative John McCravey, who is in
Greenwood,
right, in the Family Caucus. He had one of his people helping us out looking at tapes too. And so their tapes got posted before mine did. And so they were sending me, I worked up the numbers thing. I worked up spreadsheets and all with percentages and all this nerdy stuff. And so they would send me the tapes and I would, just log them on my spreadsheet. And so I got two of them in. The first one was from our precinct, and I knew we were going to dominate that. And then the second one was from Anderson Elementary, which we performed poorly in, and we flipped it and won that, 65-35.
And that's where we concentrated the runoff and where we performed the poorest and tried to figure out why we performed poorly there and figured it out and
What was it? Was there a thing or just you weren't there enough?
It was a combination of Sarita connected with voters, getting in front of voters and talking to them and making connections. It creates loyal voters. She did that. So when you actually talk to people, they're loyal to you. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it helps.
It helps.
It certainly helps.
But all she did was put up road signs. She went. We found one or two people that she visited because they had money or some kind of title or something like that. But she wasn't out. So if we went to a neighborhood and she talked to a certain person, she never talked to the neighbors that were also voters. So she only targeted a few specific people. She was really relying on the signs, the ads, and the people in Columbia pulling her through. Yeah. She wasn't actually connecting with voters. And so we knew that, or we just had a feeling that the people that she was attracting, because she's an unknown. She doesn't own a business like she does, the other lady. We've only been there for 4 years. And so we felt that people who were coming out to vote for her were voting for her because they like her or
they
agree with her.
Well,
they saw you and you talked to them. I mean, you're a name with a face.
Right.
You're
but there. The people who voted for her just saw the sign and they didn't, hey, I saw her sign. So yeah. I don't know why, but we just really felt that her voters are going to come back in the runoff and the other ladies were not. And that's exactly what happened.
And I ended up getting more votes in the runoff than I did in the actual election.
That's so awesome.
We got about 8 or 9% in the runoff, but she exceeded her total from the first primary and the other lady lost 400 votes. Yeah. But anyway, so I got that second tape. And when I got that one, I kind of knew, but then they posted mine, ours, and it was also 65-35. And then I just knew. And I was elated. I was elated. I couldn't wait to get back and tell. But
when do you start? When do you show up?
So what's next is actually the only thing I won on the runoff was the right to be on the ballot in November. But there is no opposition,
right? Unless they somebody decides they want to finance an independent or something.
You can't. They already had filed.
Oh, too late. Okay,
too late.
No, you can.
You can do a write-in campaign.
Yeah, you can do
a write-in campaign.
Everybody knows that's not going to work.
But
50%
of our district is going to be straight Republican. So it's a while yet, basically. So we're less than 4 months.
And highly unlikely that anything is going to happen.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then that'll be on that Tuesday. That next Monday, I'll be sworn in my Spartanburg delegation, and I'll begin work that day. And then I'll go to Columbia in late November, early December for orientation for $10,000 you make in a salary. They talk about all that stuff. Show you where to go. I don't even know where to go.
You make $10,000 annually?
That's your salary. $10,400 is your salary.
It's like a part-time job.
It's not full time, but you're down there from, and then, so once that's over in January, I think the second week of January, you go down Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday until May.
I think Hendersonville City Council makes that much money.
Yeah.
I believe they
do. And that's written in the Constitution. So if you want that change, we have to change the Constitution of South Carolina.
What the salary is?
Mm-hmm.
Not even with like kind of living wages
increases?
When
was it written in the 1700s?
I'm not sure, but it's not meant, you're not meant to be a full-time politician. You're meant to be a citizen.
Most jobs.
A citizen politician.
Yeah. Most of them are below the federal level.
I'm still showing real estate. I'm still doing all those things. But I'll start in January and I'll go down and I'll be down through May for most of the session. But before then, once I actually get elected, I'll be invited to ribbon cuttings.
Now, do they put you up while you're down there or anything?
They give you a per diem.
Oh, they do. Oh, okay. That's good. Because I know a lot of people in D.C. spend a ton of money just trying to find housing and stuff.
But the people in D.C. are not allowed to have an outside job. Like senators and congressmen, I found that out. You are not allowed. It's against the law for you to have an outside job. So, but for me, I'm really about an hour and 20 minutes from the state house. But even still, I was like, I don't know where to go. Where do I park?
Right.
Where's my office?
It's like showing up to college for the first time.
So you're I've got to go to orientation.
Yeah.
And we're called freshmen. I'm going to be a freshman legislator. And yeah, so it starts in November, and they give you like a gas allowance and things like that. But you know, I'm planning on doing the drive back and forth unless I know it's going to be a late session.
Yeah.
You know, where I'll stay the night, but it's late nights and early mornings and.
Well,
dealing with politicians.
So once you get sworn in and you start doing your orientation and you start doing this, I want to revisit this and find out, because I want to learn like how this happens, you know, that way, because I'm never going to run for office. I mean, unless the Lord calls me at the beach.
Like, it's very, it'll be very interesting. I'm probably going to be a deer in headlights. Like,
yeah.
This is amazing. And
I think you're built for it. Honestly,
you get a little pin, and apparently if you walk around the state house with that pin on, people like let you on the elevator first, let you off the elevator first. Like, it's so surreal to know that, holy cow, wow, I did it.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. I did it. I was told I needed to raise a certain amount of money. I raised about 10% of that. So...
Well, that just goes to show you that it's not about money. It's not about social media. It's not about the signs. It's about connecting with people.
At this level of government.
Yeah.
Well, you know, just to put it in perspective, I probably walk 15,000 steps a day, 6 days a week, 5-6 days a week in the heat, sometimes in the rain. Knocked on all total about 3,300 doors. Talk to thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what it takes to win an election, at least on this
level. I think one of our strengths was, you know, influencing people. A lot of times is just letting them talk to you, listening. And she was really good about, I think that was part of the connecting. She didn't have a spiel necessarily. I'm Sarita, I'm 2A, I believe in this and this. Like, the first question is, what are the issues that concern you?
And what are your
main
issues?
When you get those people talking to you, that it just you could see people turn. I mean, we had so many stories. I remember one guy, I think it was that same day where we ran across Bob Barker. The guy came to the door.
That'd be Bobette, thank
God. Dang, Bob Barker.
Bobette Barker.
Bobette Barker.
This is interesting. The guy came to the door. I'm not going to say his name, but I remember his name. But he's like, I appreciate what you're doing, but I don't vote anymore. I don't have any faith in the system.
He's like Andy said earlier. Yeah. Disillusioned.
And then his wife. Then his wife came to the door like, whoa, 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 what are you talking about? We're going to talk to this lady. And so we ended up sitting there talking to him, and we had friends in common. They're believers. Their entire family lives on that street. And all of a sudden they became like some of our biggest supporters, and they were everybody in their little precinct. They were telling everybody about it. And it was geographically, it was a furthest precinct from us.
Wow.
But she dominated that precinct. It was one of the best performing ones just because of this one house that just turned a neighborhood.
That's cool.
That's awesome. To a guy that didn't want to vote anymore.
Yeah. He was just disillusioned. But
she went up and talked to him, and got, instead of just telling him, she asked him. and got him to spill why he had these beliefs. And you could just see it in their eyes sometimes how they just turn.
So have you reached out to him after the fact?
Not after the fact, but he actually reached out to me, or they did, his wife did, and congratulated me.
They're Facebook friends.
And I had a lot of people who did that. We voted for you. We voted for you. We're so proud of you. Thank you for doing this. We got your back. I mean, just all kinds of things like that. And like I said, I've had people send me bills to do, but
yeah.
Or bills that they like, and maybe we should look at them. And I've connected with a lady I knew actually when we lived here in Hendersonville. She's now in the state legislature in North Carolina, and she was just tickled pink that I won. And her name's Jennifer Balcom, and she's a representative. I'm not sure.
I know exactly who that is.
Yeah, she and I were friends before.
She's in Hendersonville.
Yeah.
I know exactly who she is.
Yes, but wow. when I told her I was running, she was, because we're friends, and she's like, I'm so excited, I hope you win. And when she was like, I wish you could see my face, I'm crying. I'm in the legislature right now, but I was watching the results, and I was like, oh, that's so sweet.
Yes, I know who that is. That's so cool. Good for you. Well, I certainly appreciate you guys coming up here to talk about this. I'm super excited. I'm super proud of you. I have been this whole time.
You've been a big supporter. Thank you for checking in on me and praying for me. And
yeah, man.
I missed all my donkeys.
Yeah.
So, curiously, Andy's wearing an elephant today.
Yeah, it comes with the territory.
Yeah, I am.
No donkeys today, but an elephant. So.
Yeah, if it's not a giraffe or a donkey, it's an elephant or whatever animal.
Elephants are cool.
The elephants are smart.
Elephants are smart.
They are.
And loyal.
They are.
I think they have names for one another.
Probably.
Do they?
I believe elephants are one of the ones they have sounds that identify specific elephants. They only respond to the right sounds.
So that's over there. And
exactly. There you go.
Can't do it. Sorry. Well, Sarita and Mike, thanks for being up here, guys. Congratulations. That's so killer. I'm so glad you did it. You won. You answered the call. You did it.
Congratulations.
And came through.
Thank you.
Yep. Very good. Andy, thanks for living here, for being here, and never getting to stand unless we're here.
That's right. It's almost true.
Anyway, and we will talk to you guys again next time on the Burrows of Berea. Peace out.
Bye, y'all. I hadn't been able to do that in a while.
Hey, guys, this is Rick from the Burrows of Berea. A lot of people have been asking us, hey, what is this Patreon thing? Our old Patreon ad didn't work very well. So here you go, guys. Go to www.patreon. That is patreon.com. Let me do that again. patreon.com/theburrowsofberea. If you go to the Patreon page, you will find that we have different levels that you can give at. We have a $3 level, a $5 level. We've got a $10 level and a $20 level. I thought about putting a $1,000 level there, but you never know how that's going to work out, right, Andy? That's right. So go to www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea and give us all of your money.
even a little bit will be fine.
Yeah. And that $5,000 wouldn't hurt my either.
No, it would hurt nobody.
Thanks, guys. And try to get your mic sort of like facing your face. Like, you see how it's facing mine straight on? There you go. There, we're talking.
Yep, there goes the first penny.
Yeah. Well, the thimbles are already down, and they're the prize.
That's great. Okay. Yep.
I got to tell you guys about how I got the bird on my face this morning.
Sometimes you're the bird, sometimes you're the statue. Yep. And today you were the statue.
I was the statue, absolutely.
Man, that happened, huh?
Oh, 100%. I'll try to work it in somewhere. I don't know.
Work it in.
Hey, we're talking about politicians, so bird poop.
feels appropriate.
Speaking of things on my face. Sorry for the language.
You got to clean it back up, Rick.
Yep.
Sarita's in the building.
Are we rolling, Andy?
Yes, sir. Yep.